Hello and welcome everyone to the amino acid testing. This presentation should be a sigh of relief compared to organic acids. Organic acids are a bit more complicated. They're probably among the most complicated of all the functional tests that you will do. Of course, they do give us lots of information. So before we begin, let's just make sure that you're aware that any of the information I'm presenting here is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional, and it's also not medical advice. And when you're presenting to your clients, you need to be really careful and make sure that they are aware that what you're presenting and what I'm presenting here today is intended as a sharing of my knowledge, information, clinical research, and clinical experience over many years. I encourage you, and you should encourage your clients, to make their own healthcare decisions based upon your research and in partnership with a qualified healthcare professional. This is especially true for folks who are on any medications. Just want to make sure that the things that we talk about in terms of nutrition are not going to interfere with the protocols.
So this presentation is geared towards amino acids. I've started with an explanation of what the amino acids are, what they do, a little bit of familiarity with them, and then we'll go through a case of what it means when these things go out of whack. So let's start with what really are amino acids. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. Proteins, we think about it, you need to eat protein. Protein's really important, but it's the amino acids that are the building blocks that make up your protein. They are biologically active. They're organic compounds, and they have a very specific structure. They are composed of what's called an amine group, which is an N nitrogen, H hydrogen, 2. So two hydrogens and one nitrogen. And you can see that on the slide over on the left-hand side, which is the N and the two H's coming off of it. You've got a carboxylic group, which is COOH, which is on the right-hand side. Double bond between the carbon and the oxygen, and then the OH off to the side. That's called a carboxylic group. And then there's a side chain, and that's where it's specific to each individual amino acid. So they look like this with the exception of the side chain, and that's what makes them different, both structurally and functionally. And the key elements in any amino acid would be carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen. And then other elements may be there for specific amino acids, and those would come in that R, that side chain. That R could be huge, it could be very tiny. And that's what amino acids are. They are powerful, powerful, powerful organic compounds. They have functions that range from all over the map, from neurotransmitters, the immune system, enzymes, structure, collagen, muscles, ligaments. They make up the structure of the body, but they also have important roles when it comes to the function of the body. So the videos, these are some kind of cool videos. One of them I didn't put up there because it was so boring. But these are kind of cute. You know, some of them are better than others. But if you want to know more and you want to watch you more visually, it'll give you more background, more detail than I want to go into today. You could spend hours, I could spend days talking to you about the chemistry of the different amino acids and the functions of every single amino acid. That's something you can learn on your own. What I'm here to give you is direction into when you might be doing an amino acid test on someone and what you can glean about that person's biochemistry, physiology, and pathophysiology at the time. So good references for you if you want to learn more, if you want to dig. And then let's talk a little bit about all the various functions that amino acids have. I like this little picture, and I gave you a blow-up of that picture in your handouts, and it's a full-size one. I found it online. It just gives us an idea of where in our body the various amino acids are happening, are functioning, are structurally there. So when you actually sit down with somebody and go over an amino acid test result with them, if you have a picture like this handy and you start to see imbalances, you may be able to mark this picture up and get a picture, a glimpse, a look at where the person's physiology and anatomy are falling apart. So the structure, of course, right? Muscles, bones, ligaments, tendons, the collagen structure in the body. is all related to amino acids. Your skin, your hair, your nails, all related to amino acids. Enzymes, so your digestive enzymes, the enzymes that make up your immune system. Enzymes catalyze, meaning speed up reactions in all different parts of your physiology and biochemistry. Amino acids make up enzymes. Hormones, your hormones like cortisol, like estrogen, progesterone. Different structures of amino acids make up the hormones. Transport proteins. So we talk about thyroid and we might be talking about thyroglobulin. Or we might be talking about binding proteins that carry the hormones through the body in an inactive way and then they get unbound from that. The other thing is energy intermediates. What does that mean? Well, the Krebs cycle intermediates, there's a lot of amino acids that are used as Krebs cycle intermediates to create energy, to create ATP in your body. There are amino acids that regulate muscle activity, contraction, relaxation, etc. There's amino acids are used for growth and repair. Obviously, you know, if you're trying to rebuild some tissue somewhere, skin, hair, nails, collagen, you're going to need amino acids to do that. And finally, last but definitely not least on the list is neurotransmitters, meaning the chemistry that has your brain talking to other parts of your body and also keeps track of your mood. It controls your mood and your focus and your affect. So if you look at this chart, you'll see that the amino acids that are active in the brain would be things like taurine, GABA, glycine, phenylalanine, DLPA, glutamine, tyrosine, tryptophan. Some of those are neurotransmitters in and of themselves, and others are neurotransmitter precursors, like tyrosine and tryptophan are actually precursors, and GABA is actually a neurotransmitter in and of itself. You've got the anterior pituitary, which uses arginine and glycine. You know, the hypothalamus, which uses phenylalanine. Your thyroid, which uses phenylalanine and tyrosine. Tyrosine is actually the core of your thyroid molecule. Thyroid is three iodines or four iodines with a tyrosine. Tyrosine amino acid is very important. Amino acids that are important in the lungs are NAC and acetylcysteine and cysteine itself, and they're very protective. NAC, when people take supplemental NAC, when they have really thick mucus that lines their lungs, that can help to break that down and make it more thin and planar. NAC is also a precursor to glutathione, so it's very important in your liver as well. Your heart uses carnitine, lysine, methionine, CoQ10, magnesium. Magnesium not being in amino acids, but a cofactor that's important. Same with CoQ10. Your liver uses alanine, methionine, phenylalanine, threonine, tryptophan. Your gallbladder uses glycine and taurine. Taurine's actually a constituent of the bile acids. In your blood carries all of the amino acids, but those that are specific to its function would be like cysteine, histidine, tryptophan, and serine. Your muscle, which is made up of a lot of collagen tissue, and the important ones for collagen would be proline and hydroxyproline, but the muscle itself would be glycine, lysine, leucine, isoleucine, valine, and magnesium. And leucine, isoleucine, and valine, as we'll look at in a bit, are what's called branch chain amino acids. They're the main structural proteins within the muscle, and they can quickly be broken down during a process called gluconeogenesis to create new glucose. So they're actually part of the energy metabolism as well. So it goes on. I don't know. You can look at the chart and kind of get a sense of when you look at a person's amino acid profile, what organs and glands might be affected by that. So this, again, is a little close-up of the structure, the amino acid structure. And again, it's the amine group, the carboxyl group, the side chain, and then the core. Here's some pictures just because I thought it was cute. If you like that, there's also an enlarged version of these. If you ever want to really look, really like to dig into the biochemistry, you have a reference chart just like this on the website. These are the eight essential amino acids, meaning your body needs to be taking these in from the outside. You cannot make these. No matter how much carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen you have, you cannot make these amino acids. Your body doesn't know how to make them. There are lots of amino acids in your body. These eight are essential. You have to have them. You have to eat them, or your body breaks itself down. These are called conditionally essential. Some people call them conditionally non-essential. And let me go back and read those. The 8 essential amino acids are leucine, isoleucine, valine, lysine, methionine, tryptophan, phenylalanine, arginine, and threonine. Believe me, it'll take you a while before you memorize these, and that's what charts are for. You want to have a working knowledge of these. You want a working knowledge of how all this stuff fits together. But memorizing, don't feel like, oh my God, I'll never memorize this. This is not school. When you were in school, they made you memorize and be tested on a lot of stuff that you really don't need in your daily life. What I'm giving you here is stuff that I want you to be able to use in your real life. So understanding which amino acids are essential so that when you're looking at somebody's diet and you're looking at what they're taking in and you're looking at what's going wrong, you might be able to quickly say, oh my gosh, they must have a shortage of branched chain amino acids and they're breaking down their muscle to produce energy. What can we do about this? The conditionally essential mean that as long as you're very well repleted in the essentials, you should be able to make these. In some books, they call them conditionally non-essential. So either way you want to look at it, I like to look at the glass half full. So this is conditionally essential. And that molecule that you're seeing there is actually arginine, the one that's top on the list. Arginine, which a lot of people take as a supplement because it helps your body to form nitric oxide. It helps men have better erections. It helps to keep your cardiovascular system stronger. It also can contribute to herpes viruses by throwing lysine out of balance. So it's all about balance. It's not about, wow, I like the sound of that amino acid, I'm going to take more of it because it's going to do this great thing for me. No, it's about balance. So arginine, asparagine, glutamine. You've heard of glutamine when we talked about the gut, right? The gut, healing leaky gut. Glutamine is a great amino acid for that. Glycine, proline, serine. Glycine and proline and also hydroxyproline make up your collagen. So if you're having sagging skin as you age, or you have wounds that don't heal, muscle injuries and tendon injuries that don't heal, you may be short on these particular amino acids. And of course, tyrosine, which is an amazing amino acid, it's so multi-purposed that it's important for thyroid. It's the core of the thyroid. It helps to make epinephrine and norepinephrine, which are part of the adrenal stress response. It's also a precursor to dopamine. So there's a lot of different functions that tyrosine has. You'll see as I go through, there's certain favorites that I have kind of really know, have a very good working knowledge of what they do because you use them a lot. And others are more, they're just more obscure and you're not going to see as much of deficiency, but you may see some deficiency signs. Here are some of the non-essential amino acids, alanine, aspartate, cysteine, and glutamate. When I say non-essential, it doesn't mean that your body doesn't need these for function. What it means is that as long as you have essential amino acids plus alpha-ketoglutarate and vitamin B6, then you can synthesize these. Okay. So whatever we can't synthesize in our bodies, we have to take in. Similar to the way we looked at fatty acids and said, well, linoleic and alpha-linolenic are essential fatty acids. We cannot make them in our body, but we can make EPA, we can make DHA, but it depends on us having enough of the essentials plus the cofactors that help to convert. Very similar here with amino acids. Some of the ones that are important for neurotransmitters and precursors. So they're neurotransmitters and precursors to neurotransmitters. That slide may be a little bit confusing. Phenylalanine, which is a precursor to tyrosine, which is a precursor to dopamine. Tryptophan, which is a precursor to 5-hydroxytryptophan, which is a precursor to serotonin, which is a precursor to melatonin. So you get the idea. There's a lot of real important things. There's hormone and neurotransmitter right in that tryptophan pathway. Glutamic acid, which is converted to glutamine, which is a glutamate, is a neurotransmitter that's very excitatory. You've heard of monosodium glutamate. Well, glutamates are excitatory neurotransmitters. Taurine is a precursor to GABA. And then GABA, which is a gamma-aminobutyric acid, GABA is a calming neurotransmitter. So people who are low in GABA actually are anxious and have a lot of jittery stuff going on in their brain. They can't slow their brain down. So then some of the collagen-related amino acids would be proline, hydroxyproline, and hydroxylysine. And that's actually a collagen bond that's a pictorial view of what a collagen strand looks like. It's very complicated, very complex structure. And your body needs these precursor amino acids plus a lot of the nutrients to pull it together. And I'm going to show you a really nice chart that I actually copied from the book that I told you about that I love, the lab book. It's a really nice chart which helps you at a glance when you're looking at amino acid tests to see, oh, the person is low in this amino acid. What cofactors, what vitamins, what minerals are needed? And we'll look at that in a little bit. We have the sulfur-containing amino acids. We think of sulfur as having that really strong smell, like when you strike a match or when you go to hot springs. Well, these sulfur amino acids are super important for sulfation reactions in your liver, detoxification. So these are important, and some of them are essential, some of them are conditionally. Methionine, cysteine, homocysteine, cystathionine, and taurine. Taurine actually is a precursor to GABA. So I put people on taurine when they were low in GABA. Then we have our energy-producing amino acids. The first three are considered branched-chain amino acids, meaning that they can easily be broken down into glucose when needed. 30% of your muscle protein is made of these branched-chain amino acids, and actually 50% of your dietary amino acids are usually the branched chains. Say you're about to run away from a hungry tiger and cortisol comes into play, and it needs to get some sugar into your bloodstream. What does it do? It does something called gluconeogenesis, goes out to the muscles and breaks down the muscle tissue so it can get access to the isoleucine, leucine, and valine and convert that into sugar really quickly. Histidine tends to be high when you have muscle breakdown. So if you do an amino acid test and you see it high, it's because it's part of muscle and it's broken down. And anything that's part of muscle that can be broken down during gluconeogenesis can produce energy, but the ones that do it most efficiently are isoleucine, leucine, and valine. Also, another little thing about histidine is it's low in people that have rheumatoid arthritis. So it's an important part of that muscular structure that gets broken down and attacked by the antibodies in rheumatoid arthritis. Lysine is part of the whole structure of collagen, the cross linkages between the collagen that make it strong, that hold it together. It's the cross linkages that break down as we age and the skin starts to sag. And then threonine. And again, threonine can be converted into sugars, and low levels lead to hypoglycemia. So for people who don't have enough threonine, oftentimes that's a cause of their hypoglycemia. So if you're looking at somebody and they're, well, they're not doing a lot of sugar stuff and they're not having a lot of high insulin surges and going down, it could be that they're insufficient in threonine. So what's this all about? Why are we studying this? Why are we looking at this? Why do we even care? Why do we want to measure amino acids? Well, first of all, you want to assess their protein intake and sufficiency. Do they take in enough protein to do growth and repair of their structure? It's really important to know, are they taking in enough? And you can tell by measuring amino acids whether they are. Sometimes those things are visible externally because somebody who is exercising but can't build up muscle may not have enough of it. Some of it's visible on a standard blood test. So you have somebody that has a low BUN or low protein or albumin globulin. But sometimes it's more subtle. And sometimes they're just having some really subtle symptoms. And maybe it is an injury that's not healing all the way or a leaky gut that just won't get fixed. You want to look at their protein intake and the sufficiency. And you can do that by looking at their amino acids. You can assess the adequacy of their stomach acid. If somebody's not producing enough stomach acid, but they're eating plenty of protein, you're going to see low amino acids. You can assess clues to neurotransmitter imbalances. So if the amino acids or certain ones are low, that's going to give you a clue that that particular set of neurotransmitters that are dependent on those amino acids aren't going to be working properly. Same thing with hormone adequacy. And you can also look at healing and immune issues. So somebody's having a hard time healing. They get a lot of colds and flus. They may be low in amino acids that are necessary for immune function. And finally, measuring amino acids can give you clues to vitamin and mineral status. And generally, when you're looking at the amino acids for protein sufficiency or insufficiency, or stomach acid sufficiency or insufficiency, what you're looking at is looking for low levels, that the levels of the amino acids are too low. when you're looking at vitamin mineral status, you see, similar to what we saw in the organic acids, you'll see high levels of certain amino acids and low levels of others. And when you look at pathways, you're able to tell that, oh, if this one's high, that means that they are short on this particular vitamin or this particular mineral. I personally don't memorize all of those. Some of those, because of wear and tear use all the time, I remember, but I like to have my charts handy, and around my desk is all my little chart books, and I know exactly how to pull it out when I'm reading a lab or you know, working on a case and trying to understand what's going on with someone. So the labs that I use, we look at the practitioner-only labs, Metametrics and Doctor's Data, will run amino acid tests. When you run them, you can either run plasma or urine. And there's particular indications as to whether the plasma is better or urine is better. And it depends on who you read and what research they've done. It's generally thought that the plasma is a little bit more telling in terms of sufficiency and insufficiency, but it's not always the case, and it's not always easy to get the blood, right? So if you order through Direct Labs, if you don't have a license to order blood and have somebody tested, or you're working remotely with somebody, you can order these tests through Direct Labs, and you can definitely get the Metametrics, and I think the Doctor's Data too, so you can price those out and see what the differences are. When you run them, you're going to get either the choice of the essential amino acids or an extended essential. I think that they do 11 in a blood spot. So that's an easier way to do it, a blood spot where the person can take it. Not considered quite as accurate as plasma, but it's a good indication. You can do 24-hour urine, or you can do spot urine. And you can do 20, 40, or the 11 short kind of version of the amino acids, depending on what you're looking for. And Great Plains will allow people to order directly themselves. Direct Labs will. It turns out that I had somebody order a combo amino acids and organic acids from Great Plains, but they actually source it out to Doctor's Data. So when it came back, you'll see when we look at this that it says Doctor's Data on it. And then a new lab that I just discovered, Acessa Lab, www.acessalabs.com, which will allow you to order some of the Metametrics and Doctor's Data and other tests like that. So it's just a matter of where your person is located and whether you can order labs directly for them, or pricing. And the prices vary. As we know with Direct Labs, they're always having a special on this and a special on that. So you can, you know, just kind of fiddle around with it when you're ordering tests or recommending that somebody get a test ordered. So let's show you a few things that I have. The periodic table of amino acids. I just thought this was cute. It was laid out like the periodic table of the elements, only it's the amino acids. So it's just a nice little chart that gives you a few things about them. So that's for your reference. We're not going to go over that or anything, but I just thought it was a nice little reference chart. A lot of the stuff that I'm sharing with you on the site are available on various websites, some of the interpretation guides and the samples and all. However, it took me hours and hours and hours to compile all that. And so I compiled it and I put it in one place so you don't have to do all the compilation. The other thing I want you to look at, and that's just for your reference to look at, this chart. I want you to keep this handy as we go through, which is, it says Amino Acid Chart by Dr. Braley. Table 4-1. So the amino acid functions chart. That's this one we went through. This is an awesome little thing. That's another one to keep out and keep handy. And it's a great learning tool. You can just kind of look at it every day and you'll get a sense of what amino acids help what. This one is just for people who are really geeky and like to look at various structures. It gives you the structure, not the picture, but the structure, C6, C3H2, NO2. You notice they all have either an NO2 or some sort of NO in them. That's the hallmark of an amino acid, that it has that nitrogen, that nitric group. Okay, it gives you the weight, etc. So that's just a reference guide for you. The case study, which is an amino acid, 75-year-old female with anxiety and hypertension. This was the same woman that we did for the organic acids test. She basically is suffering from long-term anxiety and hypertension and can't seem to get it under control. So the first page of the test, this is page one, you're going to see they always give you creatinine. If your creatinine is not within a normal range, it means that the urine is either too dilute or too concentrated, and you're not going to necessarily get a really valid response. This is just true of the urine one. They don't do this on the plasma one. This is a urine test. I generally run the urine tests mainly because of the ease that people don't have to go to the lab. They can just do it at home if there are particular indications that I thought they should run it. And I also give you that on the page. There's a chart, amino acid profiling metametrics guide. It goes through guidelines for determining the specimen of choice, whether you want to do plasma or urine. So it goes through and explains to you what's good for what. So in her particular case, she's got normal levels of creatinine, so everything's okay there. Her ammonia level is low. When you see ammonia level low, it's usually a clue that she has overall protein deficiency. Okay, shortage of those nitrogen groups. Ammonia should be at a certain level within the urine. She's at a low level there. Then we're looking at the next section, which is your essential amino acids and your conditionally. They call them conditionally indispensable. So however you want to call them. Okay, that's the first group and the second group, right? So the methionine, lysine, threonine. So the ones that she has that are low are methionine, the very first one. And this one doesn't do as good a job of saying low. You're just kind of looking at the reference range. So the reference range is 8 to 48. She's at a 7.2. Methionine is one of our sulfur amino acids. It's also a methyl donor. And one of the things we know about this person was that she has the MTHFR gene. She does not know if she has one or two. And that's a methylation defect. It's a problem in the methylation pathways. And when that happens, oftentimes methionine is low. Depends on which one. She has the MTHFR, and there are others that usually go along with it, but she didn't have any of those tested. So when somebody is low on methionine, they need more of those sulfur-containing amino acids. A lot of the animal proteins are higher in methionine than vegetable proteins, but cashews and almonds tend to be pretty good sources of methionine. You can also have somebody, if you're doing dietary shifts to try to address what you find in these, you can have them go to an online database where they put in all their food, something like fitday.com. Works really well, and you can see which amino acids they're low and high, and they can adjust their diet, add, you know, a handful of almonds or cashew yogurt, or if they're a meat eater, add a little bit of extra meat that contains methionine. Also, when somebody is low in methionine, we get concerned about their ability to make glutathione. So we want to look at helping them with that and supplying either a precursor of glutathione or a topical glutathione or some sort of approach to glutathione. If we look here at the chart that I gave you, that 4.1, and you look up the sulfur-containing amino acids, which is on the second page of it, page 77, it says methionine. Let's look over to see what other nutrients she might need. So it's saying, well, with methionine being low, it's just a shortage of nutrition, right? There's nothing listed there, right? But if she was high in methionine, it would mean something else. So let's keep going. Most of her levels, if you look, the 50 percentile, she's all below the 50 percentile except arginine, right? So lysine, threonine, the ones that she's actually below the range on are lysine. And interesting, look at this. Lysine is low and arginine is high. What this means is that this person might be subject for getting herpes, cold sores, because when arginine is high and lysine is low, that's when the herpes virus likes to break out. So you might be asking her about that and asking her about her diet. Is she eating? She may be eating a lot of nuts. I know she does. She might be eating a lot of chocolate because chocolate contains arginine as well. But that's a ratio you want to make sure stays in balance, because then they're subject to having herpes outbreaks. Okay. Her threonine is reasonable. Her leucine is low and her isoleucine is low. When you have low levels of your branched chain amino acids, it generally means you're not getting enough protein. So if we look on the chart, the 4.1 chart, it talks about the isoleucine and the leucine. When they're low, it generally means that they need more of them. It doesn't mean anything fancy. There's no shortage of other nutrients. It's just really a low protein intake or a low protein absorption. So we'd be looking at her to see how much protein is she actually eating. And more than that, how's her absorption? How's her digestion? Is there an impairment somewhere along the way in the digestion that's causing her not to get enough protein in? So the pattern we're seeing here is insufficient protein. Her valine is okay. It's at the low end. Her phenylalanine is normal, but at the low end. Her tryptophan is in the normal range, but at the low end. Her taurine is at the low end. Her cysteine is mostly towards the lower third, at least. The arginine is high, right? The arginine is high. And then the histidine is very low. It's very, very low. When the histidine is low, it's usually a sign of low stomach acid and protein malabsorption. So let's just look on the list here. And again, when histidine is low, it could also mean that she's low in folic acid. And yeah, what they're basically saying is to supplement with 800 micrograms of folic acid and histidine. Now, this is a person who we know has an MTHFR issue, and she's taking folic acid, but that MTHFR affects the utilization, the methylation of folate. So she may need to be taking more folic acid in. Okay, did we say her lysine was, yeah, when the lysine is low, it could be a need for carnitine. And the recommendation in this book is 1 to 2 grams. Now, if we go back and remember, you may not remember, but I do, when we did her organic acids, carnitine came up all over the place. So this is a person who is getting a confirmation on both tests that she's short on carnitine and that she needs to keep up her folate levels. And she's going to need overall extra amino acids. What else do we have low? Was the tryptophan and the taurine. If we look at our chart here, when somebody's low in tryptophan, they're saying to have them take, but we had some indications on the other test that she had too much tryptophan, so we're not going to supplement her in tryptophan. We're just going to kind of watch. The taurine, however, is listed under the sulfur-containing amino acids. It could be a shortage of B6 that contributes to the low taurine. So we'd want to be looking at the zinc, the B6. I was saying zinc because I also have a note to myself that says on leucine, you want to look at zinc because zinc is a possibility in terms of the levels there. So we look down at her non-essential amino acids. They are not quite as off as her essentials, but they're all within kind of the normal range, but several of them are within the low normal: aspartate, glutamine, cysteine, tyrosine, and serine. Interesting that she showed up as tyrosine being low, because on the other test, there were some indications that some of the metabolic byproducts of tyrosine were high. So that probably indicates that there were some issues with the nutrients, and we'd have to go back to that one and have a look at that. So that's page 1, and you can see there it's analyzed by doctor's data. So now, those are all the amino acids that were tested. However, we have extras. We have some of the intermediates that were tested, and also they re-report the levels for a lot of those essentials and non-essentials afterwards, but categorized. So we look at the gastrointestinal markers, and this is a woman who had really, really bad GI stuff going on her organic acid test. She had a lot of those markers for toxicity in her gut. So when we look at these, some of them are on the borderline again. So GI, some of the stuff that's related to the gut, the threonine, tryptophan, and taurine are all related to the gut, are confirming that as well. Beta-alanine, all of the others are a little bit on the low side as well. So definitely confirms some of the GI stuff. But these are within the reference range. They're just not ideally within the reference range. The next section are markers for magnesium dependence. So if we were to look and see, again, none of them are high. They're all on the low side. So she's definitely got a low amount of protein, and we really need to be looking at helping her to either get more protein or absorb more protein, because she's not doing enough. So if you correlate this with the other, well, this book doesn't show the magnesium one, so we'll just look here for that. The magnesium-dependent ones, she's got a few that are on the low end. She's got phosphoethanolamine, which is definitely below the range. Hers is 14. The phosphoethanolamine and phosphoserine can be helped with lecithin. You can get sunflower lecithin or soy lecithin, as long as it's not a GMO soy, and they are filled with the phospholipids in the phosphatidyl choline, serine, and ethanolamine. So she definitely is low on the ethanolamine one. Then again, the taurine was on the borderline. No, the taurine is definitely low. It's outside of the range. It's hard to see on this picture because it's not in color. And the serine is on the low end of normal. So we just want to look at the ability of her body to handle proteins and the sulfur-containing ones as well. So she may be having some issues with detoxification. Here's some folate and B6 and B12 markers. And overall, they look pretty good. The top ones, they're not so far out of range. The lower ones, the intermediates, the beta, alanine, homocysteine, sarcosine, actually having homocysteine, yeah, you want it to be less than 5, and hers is. These are all ones that she's definitely within the range, because these are the ones that when they're elevated, they're a problem. So they're pulled out and marked separately in a different way. Okay, so we have detoxification markers. And overall, her detoxification markers, she's got low methionine and taurine. Again, those are related to detoxification. So again, what we talked about before, getting her to get more of those in there, and if need be, supplementing with them. Okay. Sometimes SAMe, which is a supplement that was indicated based on her organic acids, and also something that I had recommended that she do last time she was in, and that's a form of methionine, and that can be helpful as well. So we're just going to play around with doses and figure out how to get her back into range. The thing about this is that there's nothing that's like really clear, like, wow, that's an anxiety marker. You know, like, wow, the GABA's really low, or the tyrosine or the tryptophan are really, really off the charts low. Tryptophan is at the low end, and 5-HTP and serotonin are definitely involved with the ability of the body to stay calm, and anxiety is one of the side effects of those. Those are the inhibitory neurotransmitters. So she's got a lot of predominance of excitatories, even though the numbers don't show it. Arginine, ammonia. Again, the ammonia keeps showing up low because that's in many different parts. So what we can do is go through what the lab gives us. We won't go through this word by word. It just talks about presumptive needs and the relationships between the amino acids and the cofactors, like the B vitamins, CoQ10, and then the creatinine. It talks about that. So read that section on the creatinine so you understand what that means in terms of the urine volume and the concentration. What they say generally about the ammonia, we've already said that it's typically an overall insufficiency or a maldigestion, malabsorption. So that's the stuff we want to look at for her. With her methionine being low, we want to look at liver. She might have some fatty liver and detoxification. Obviously, we talked about that with the sulfur groups being low. And her other report said she needed more B12. So we're definitely going to look at getting her B12 up and maybe a little extra folate and B6 and magnesium, because those all also showed up on her other test. Her low lysine, we've already talked about these things, that's why I'm not. Oh yeah, the leucine is protein malabsorption, but also there's a zinc deficiency because there's a peptidase that does some conversion of that, and when the zinc is low. So she may have some zinc, which also showed up on her other test. The taurine bile insufficiency, so looking at her fat absorption. The low histidine, you may be looking at copper, make sure she's transporting her copper appropriately, and also the HCl, because the histamine does stimulate your hydrochloric acid production. So that's what we said earlier, was that if the histidine is low, you want to be looking at about HCl production. And then the phosphoethanolamine, yes, precursor of phosphatidylcholine. And here's the thing with phosphatidylcholine. The choline is precursor to acetylcholine. And acetylcholine is a parasympathetic nervous system neurotransmitter. And the thing about that is, this is a woman who's very anxious. She's constantly being stressed. She has probably very low levels of acetylcholine, and they're not balancing out her levels of cortisol and adrenaline. So in this case, I will very frequently put people on a lecithin supplement. I like the sunflower lecithin. It's kind of liquidy, and you can add it to smoothies and to puddings and things like that to give your food a little extra substance and give your brain and your adrenal system a little bit of extra help. I don't want to spend the time going through the function of each and every one of these amino acids because, like I said, we could be here for a day or two doing that, but I've given you reference materials. It's not something you're going to hear me speak about once and get, but you have a sense of the resources that you have available. And when you start to read through the functions of the amino acids, you can get a sense of somebody that you're working with whether or not this would be a good test for them to do. If it's, oh, this sounds like something that I may be able to get some extra information from.